Okay. Very good. All right, so I would like to ask this question about David, because we're talking about him and his... we're going to deal with David and Michal, of course, but there's a little bit for David and Abigail. And the question I deal with today is, how does David take criticism? Right? How does David take criticism? So that's the question in Yuma, Daf Chaf Bet, that compares David with Shaul, and it's very simple. Shaul does not take criticism well, and David does. That's the difference between the two. The Gemara says, God, David's sins are far more egregious than Shaul's. Why does Shaul lose his kingdom over relatively minor sins? And David sins with the best of them, and he's forgiven, and his kingdom lasts. By the way, Abravanel answers a whole list of differences between Shaul and David in that score. But the Gemara's answer is because David knows how to say Chatasi, and Shaul is so perfect that he doesn't know how to atone. He doesn't know how to ask forgiveness.
And what Masechet is this?
This is the beginning of the second paragraph of Masechet Yuma. It's a tangent to the beginning of the second parak. Tells how to count the Kohanim when they start their daily avoda, and there is some psukim in Shmuel Aleph about counting the Jews when they go to battle. Shaul counts them, b'yifkadeim b'tzloyim, b'yifkadeim b'bezek, and David counts Jews and gets into some trouble at the end of Shmuel Bet with that. So the Gemara discusses that tangentially with some other inyanim of Shmuel, and then it gets off on the various comparisons between David and Shaul. Yes?
Did you understand that before Shaul was king, Pesach said that Shaul was tallest of all of Meisrei?
Shichmo v'mala gavoh mikolam. There's a Yerushalmi in Sota that says that when David's brothers were being chosen for one of them. Shmuel didn't know which one. But one of them was to be chosen. So when he made his first choice, which was despicable to God, according to the Pasuk, so he made his first choice, God said, Al tire el mar'ehu ve'el gvoa komaso. So Yerushalmi in Sota says, you see, that's not a reason to choose a king. That's the only thing that Shaul had going
for. Maybe that's why there's a guy also. Not only the physical word, but also...
At the time that Pasuk was said, Shaul was a very humble man. He didn't tell his family about being crowned king. He didn't...
He was Nechba
ben Akelim when they called him. He was a humble man then. Here's the problem, is that because he was so perfect, and he felt himself so perfect... He was transformed into a different person by becoming king. He lost his moral equilibrium, but that could be for a different reason. I mean, I think we might have discussed this before, but it's certainly Shmuel worthy. I don't know if it's couple worthy, but it's Shmuel worthy that when Pinchas skewered those two people in front of the Ohel Moed, he was given a brisi shalom. He was given a blessing of peace. So the Netziv very famously explains that he needed that blessing of peace because no matter how well he was intentioned, right? His intentions were honorable to stop the plague that was coming upon the camp, but there's no doubt that any man with a conscience would be forever his moral equilibrium would be affected by this very very cruel act of killing. I wouldn't call it murder, but it was taking a life. So in order for him to be able to function, especially as a Kohen, right? The halacha is for Ashkenazim, at least, that if a Kohen even kills someone by accident in a car crash, he can never duchen again for the rest of his life. So he can't function as a Kohen.
As a soldier.
So, but not as a soldier. That's how the Pasuk goes.
Because that's specifically...
Right, which makes us wonder why David couldn't build the base of Mikdash because he was fighting wars.
He was leading the wars, not a soldier.
So it's a little different, but let me hold on 1 second.
Okay.
So Shaul did not have this blessing. By killing off Amalek for either self... aggrandizement, to lord it over a king, or to get a king's ransom, or to take their spoils. He's committed a lot of, killed a lot of people, but he killed them. He didn't have this blessing of Risi Shalom that Pinchas got. Mm-hmm. But the Netziv says this also at the end of Yerani Dachas. It says, V'ni Richam Hashem Aleichem V'richam Cha. It says Rachamim twice. And it says, because what do you think it's going to do to a people zealously killing off everyone in there in Idachas? They could ruin a nation, kill each other like that. So Hashem is to give you rachamim, that you don't lose your, you don't become like what's happening in the Muslim world today.
Mm-hmm. Right?
Yeah, but
they were supposed to kill. Akoh,
and Pinchas was supposed to kill Cosby and Zimri. But what I'm just saying is that you know, we don't glorify in it like you see. How that appeals to the liberals of the world, I'll never know. But these people are glorifying, the Palestinians glorifying it. They're martyrs, and they named three squares and names of people who
schools,
right? The schools and summer programs. Yes, Camille.
I was gonna say, when you said with the Cohen accidental death, or like in word, I think the Sephardim and the Ashkenazim are really different. They were that the Cohen can do it.
Indeed, and so I mentioned all the Ashkenazim just now.
Yeah,
I just mentioned. Yeah. So there is questions whether they could do tshuva and everything. Okay, so no, because even if you killed by accident, an unavoidable accident, the person is still going to, you know, you clip someone with your rearview mirror and you harm someone, you know, you cause harm to anybody. It's gonna, even if it's totally their fault. You say, well, I'm sleeping well tonight. I didn't. No, but you're still gonna have a problem. So Pinchas had that bracha. The people commissioning the whatever you have to do to an Irani Dachas have that bracha, but Shaul didn't have that bracha.
What's with the
Yerim Dachas, Rabbi? They have to kill off everybody who worshipped the Avodah Zarah in that city. So you know, this is a serious thing. Okay, anyway, let's get back to our question here. Is that David takes criticism very well early in his life, mm-hmm. right? And I have I coin a term about what happens to David in Shmuel Bet, but it'll impact a little bit of what we're talking about with respect to Michal. But first, this is what's happening. In Shmuel Aleph, he's a very humble person. He has humble backgrounds, comparatively speaking. He's not born into royalty, right? Shaul wasn't either, of course. But David is not born into royalty, and he's married to someone, though, who is. Mm-hmm. Right? So she knows how to be a king better than he does, which is fair enough. He'll probably agree with that. But until then, he takes criticism. He has such a magnanimous personality in Shmuel Aleph. He's really easy, right? I mean, think of times in Shmuel Aleph where any time he rises to a new height, he says, "Who am I, a dead dog? Who am I? Who am I that I should rise to such a height to be a mechassan of the king?" You know, it could be a decoy, because he knows that he has to keep things quiet while Shaul is king. He expects to be king, right? But he's discreet. He has really a very positive personality in this regard.
He didn't take criticism from Michal.
So he doesn't take criticism from Michal, because he changed by then. But until now, he takes criticism from Abigail, right? That we did last week. Mm-hmm. When David wants to kill, right?
Last week we did Hakadosh Baruch Hu and Am Yisrael.
All right, so he takes criticism from Abigail that I know what plans you have for my husband, right? I compared two different sources with you last week. The earlier source in the Gemara that says where she tells him you would have the right to do this if you were king, but you're not king. Mm-hmm. And the later source that says even as king you don't have the right to do this. Mm-hmm. No king of Israel does things like this. In the outside world, they do things like this. When Ahav is married to Queen Jezebel, she arranges something like this. But Jewish kings don't behave this way, so you can't do this. And she does so herself with respect, and David listens. He hears it, he says, Brucha at Lashem, and he's put in his place. Right? So in Shmuel Aleph, David definitely takes criticism well, right? So Shaul makes excuses. David knows how to say chatasi, right? Mm-hmm. So how did that? So what Bina just asked: how does he take criticism from Michal? Now, David in Shmuel Bet does everything very successfully, right? There are certainly setbacks, mm-hmm. but even the setbacks are helpful to him. But he deals even magnanimously with the setbacks. Three people have to die in Shmuel Bet for David to have power. That is Shaul, mm-hmm. Avner, Ishbosheth. And in each turn, when he gets the news that this person is out of the picture, David either kills the person who brings him the news or curses the person who caused it. You know, David is you know, really, secretly, he should make a Mishab Shechianu. Mm-hmm. Right? But publicly, he, you know, why did he kill the boy who told him that a Maliki child? So Rashi struggles. Rashi says it was Doeg Ha'adomi. He quotes a psikta. That's Doeg Ha'adomi. So he's an Edomite, maybe an Amalekite, I don't know. Doeg Ha'adomi was Chayav Misa for killing all those Kohanim. And then Rashi himself says, that's not pshat. It's a mm-hmm. kid. Doeg Ha'adomi would be in his 60s, 70s by now. Right? He says, it's a Na'ar Amaleki. So some others say, well, if he was an Amaleki, he's supposed to be killed. He's supposed to kill Amaleki. No, he's a Ger Amaleki. He's a convert. Amalekim are allowed to convert. Yeah. The descendants of Haman taught Torah in Bnei Brak. Yeah. Only Ammonites and Moabites can't convert, but Amalekim can. So what he can't do, if Amaleki converts to become Jewish, he doesn't have a din that Machotim Chedze. He's stopping to behave like an Amaleki. He's behaving like a Jew.
The guy who went to convert to Judaism, his brothers were holding him in some Arabic village in Israel.
Oh, yeah.
Yes. Uh-huh. And then he spoke about the guy Hezbollah, he went out with the Haredi Jew in Sfat.
Huh. Amazing. All right, so there's a guy. The guy who had a Jobbik in Hungary is now Len Film. Yes. Yeah. They made a movie about him.
But
yeah,
he was Jewish already.
Yeah, Zeker Amalek. Yeah. Zeker Amalek, the exclude converts,
So there's a drasha, Zecher and Zecher, means something to remind you of a Malik. If he's not behaving like a Malik anymore, it's not a reminder of a Malik. So I'd rather read it that way. I mean, we're not a genocide of people that just, you know. But only if you're continuing to behave like a Malik that we have it out for you. That's the Rambam. The Rambam paskins that way in Hus Malachim. The Ramban in his Perush Al Torah. And the Bavli Tosfos and the Tosfos and the Maseches Sota. I mean, it's the same for the seven Canaanite nations, you can say. Anyway, we get back to this, is that
the seven nations, they are allowed to convert?
Well, that's again a machlokes between the Rishon and the Rambam. Okay. Says yes, the Rambam doesn't have it. Everyone, if you just change your ways, stop sacrificing your children, stop doing some really awful things, then you're uh-huh. Okay. So that's the first, the Na'ar Maleki. Then Yoav kills Avner, which really further paves the way for David. You know, was Avner sincere in wanting to return to David? This is where we left off last week, mm-hmm. where when Avner is accused by Shaul's son, Ishbosheth, of sleeping with the former wife of Shaul, mm-hmm. right? So Ishbosheth rebukes him for it, right? Stam he was. Stam, I don't know. Why would Ishbosheth make it up? Right? The Tanakh records it. The king rebukes his general. Why are you sleeping with a former wife of my father? Right? So generally, taking the former wife of a king, it could be that you want the kingdom, but Avner doesn't need to take Ritzpah Basaya to have a hand on the throne. Everybody in Israel knew he was the power of the throne, and the only reason why Ishbosheth is ruling is because of Avner. Right, so Avner says, "I don't need this. I don't need accusations from you about power. I didn't do this because of power. I did this because of loyalty to my king, my king, your father." Right. So he says, "In fact, if I'm supposed to really do the best thing for Israel, I know what I'm going to do. I'm going to go give all of the tribes over to David, which to David is good news. But it might be, especially if you're Yoav, it might be naive." Yoav, when he finds out that Avner was accepted by David, he says, "What's the matter with you? He came in to see your comings and goings. He's going to come in and deliver 10 tribes to you. No, he's going to deliver you to the 10 tribes." So David doesn't accept this. Right? Well, the world will never really know whether Avner was sincere or not. The Chazal say he was. The Chazal give very highly of Avner. The end of the fourth paragraph of the Masechet Sanhedrin is a whole discussion about the righteousness of Avner. Right? Now, look, Yoav may have a series of reasons himself for wanting to kill Avner. One, you can say he's a traitor. Why did he? Everyone in Israel knew that David should be king. When they finally crowned him king in chapter 5, they told him, "We knew even when Shaul was alive that you were really the best material for king." Really? So why didn't you help me when Shaul was trying to kill him? Well, better yet, why didn't anyone step in when his son Ish-bosheth was crowned? Right? So David is magnanimous. He didn't go there. But they said so what now? Yoav has his own reasons. You were a traitor, you're a traitor, and he's certainly going to take his job, right? If Avner is on David's side, Yoav is no longer the head captain, right? And moreover, you killed my brother, right? That could be a good reason why he wants him out of the picture, right? So after Avner signs a pact with David, David's nephew and chief armor bearer and general kills Avner. What does that look like to the papers?
David's right.
So when David sings a large, long dirge and curses the daylights out of Yoav, right? Be careful because a curse is often a boomerang. Chazal, in their amazing genius, point out how every one of the curses of David happened to one of the kings of Yehuda.
Wow.
Every one of them. They're really exact, precise. Right? So.
But he was cursing Avner?
He was cursing Yoav.
Yoav and those curses.
All happened. Every one of them fell on one of David's descendants. Being crippled, being hungry for bread, being killed by the sword, being killed by, all of them. Okay,
Avner is not considered arrogant, the fact that he is being a kingmaker, and...
We'll never know why he crowned Ishbi. Could be because of loyalty to Shaul. What else would he do? Now, it's true. It's true that Avner, being the first cousin of the new king, of course feels that there's more in it for him with Ishbosheth being king than David being king.
But he would be a weak king,
right? Ishbosheth. So maybe they
look for him. They look for Avner. With Avner not on Ishbosheth's side, he's assassinated in the next chapter. And the two assassins think that they're doing David a favor. Look, we have the head of your enemy who tried to kill you back in Shmuel Aleph, and David hacks them to death. So let no one think that I ordered the death of Ish-bosheth, or that I ordered the death of Avner, or that I was happy with the death of Shaul. Right? You know, the Gemara says something. The Mishnah says something interesting. If a child loses a parent and he's inheriting a fortune from the parent. What does the Gemara say? It's to say,
Baruch Dayan Hayemis for the parent, then Shechiyana
for the inheritance.
What?
Baruch Dayan Hayemis for the loss, the parent, and then Shechiyana for the inheritance. Mistama, the poskim say, Mistama, the Mishnah means, you say the Shechiyana after the funeral, because before the funeral, an Oni. Dayan Hayemis is Shaykh to an Oni. But Shechiyana, you shouldn't be making brachas at all. You shouldn't make a shakal on a glass of water. You certainly shouldn't be making a Shechiyana. Right? Be that as it may, but yes, so David can simultaneously say, they can say that the king is dead, long live the king. He says, Baruch Dayan Hayemis, the king is dead, you have to cut Kriya, and Shechiyanu, I'm king. Right? But only of Yehuda, though. Okay, so David has to show everybody, I didn't order the death of Avner, and it's okay, good, okay. I mean, it might have seemed to some of the Israelites that he even informed the Philistines of Shaul's whereabouts. How did the Philistines know where to find Shaul? David had been living with these Philistines for some time. Remember?
Mm-hmm. Achish Melech Gath.
Achish Melech Gath, right.
I thought there was a war.
Right, so Achish says to David, now I'll see how I'm going to have you kill Shaul for me. Right? So, but then I think they were called for another battle, and at that time, there was some other business that David had to take care of because the Amalekim came and took some of his family members. There were some other things that David was busy with while Shaul was being killed, but he was not with the Plishtim at the time. But the Israelites didn't know that. The reader knows that because we have a sefer. But David had been with the Philistines for some time, so. Mm-hmm. And then those same Philistines killed the king right afterwards. To the average Israelite, it might have seemed that David gave information about his whereabouts. Right? Yes, Moshe.
So when Yoav assassinates Abner, why is the entire house blamed, not just Abner himself?
Why is the...
You are
blamed. What do you mean, whose house?
Abner's father's house. The entire house is blamed for the death of Abner. Why not just Yoav?
The entire Yoav's house?
Yes.
I mean, look, David has to be careful. Yoav's mother is his own sister, so he doesn't curse. I mean, he has to be careful how he's, you know, the nepotistic tendencies are okay then, I guess. You can have your nephew be your general, and he was probably the best person for the job. He had two brothers also that were very good for the job, Asael and Avishai. And Asael was just killed by Avner. But, all right, but David just feels... At the end of that parak, it says, and all of Israel knew that David was not behind the death of Avner. That shows you that they suspected it until David made this quite a large spectacle of this eulogy, if you will. Okay, so here is what I'm working to. David becomes more and more successful. Everything he touches works well. And then he's bringing the Aron back into Yerushalayim. Yerushalayim is now conquered. Yoav helped with that, and that's how he really solidified his position in David's army. The conquest of Yerushalayim really requires both Shmuel and Divrei Hayamim. Divrei Hayamim helps a lot fill in the gaps of what happened in the battle, and also some archaeological data about Jerusalem and the water supply of Jerusalem. But that's not for us right now. And then once he controls Yerushalayim, it's time to bring the Aron back to a place that's a centralized place. Where has the Aron been all this time?
Temporarily, like the Philistines had it, then it was in this person's not stable, but in
Orchard, I think.
A man named Avinadav.
Which is so much like another.
Another Ben Avi. It's Haftorah. It's Haftorah right after Pesach.
Yeah.
Right?
It's like Sanya. Yeah.
Right. So he had it for 20 years, it says.
Must be in Gilgal.
Right? So David says, why should the Aron be in someone's house? It should be in a centralized place. So he brings it to Yerushalayim. Now, you know, there's two Gemaras like this. See if you can connect them. One is where David tells Shaul, you know, if God had tempted me, I would have killed you. I would not have just taken your garments. So the Gemara says in Brachos Dav Samach, tempt, you call me a tempter? Mesita to koreli? I'll mesit you all right. And that's where he counts Bnei Yisrael. It says, by Yoset Hashem. Right? That's one. Mm-hmm. Two. There's a pasuk in Tehillim that says, Miros hayu li dvarecha Hashem. Your words are like zmiros to me. The pasuk. It's in Kuf Yutes. So the Gemara in Sota says, Zmiros? My words are Zmiros to you? My words are Chukim and Mishpatim, not Zmiros. Right? But the Pasuk is innocent enough. The Pasuk is just saying, God, your words are so sweet to me like music. Uh-huh. But still, the Gemara finds fault with it. So in both of these, in the first Gemara I just mentioned, the Gemara says that I'll make you make a mistake on something she'afilu tinogo shel beis rabban know that you shouldn't violate. What's that? Because it says ki tisas rosh bnei Yisrael if kudehem v'nasnu ish kovra, that you don't count Jews, you have to give a half a shekel. So I'm gonna make you slip up on that. You're gonna slip up and you're gonna because you dared call me a mesit. So then the Gemara says, Zmiros? You call my words Zmiros? Oh, Machayecha, I'll make you make a mistake. John, can you pull me a little tea and sip from inside? If you have a chance. My whistle is a little dry. Thanks. So you call me a Zmiros? You call my words Zmiros? I'll make you make a mistake that Filutino Koshabes Raman wouldn't make. What's that in our story? Bringing the Aron back.
Dances in front of his men.
What did he do wrong even before that?
He puts it on wagons. With cows.
That's what the Philistines did.
Bakatefi
Sao. Bakatefi Sao, it says in the Torah.
Yes.
Says what?
The Katzetzis Talmud.
The arm is to be brought on the shoulders.
But on
even the Raiders of the Lost Ark, they had the Aron on shoulders, right? They weren't carrying them with the animals. Right?
Steven Spielberg, you're the guy.
And how does he put it? The Plishtim left the Aron on cows, on cow-led wagons. How are you doing this? Right? So, I'll tell you this. We have to answer that question. Ravenel in his Perush. And also, you know what? You'll find that there's this discussion in the Sefer HaChinuch. Thank you so much. Thank you. Can you pass me another cup over there? The Sefer HaChinuch on the mitzvah of Bakosef Yisau.
Maybe I'll drink one of those.
No, it's got just a cup.
But it's hot.
It's double.
No, this is fine. So, here's the water. So, on the Pasuk, because if you saw, the Sefer HaChinuch discusses next month, that it's possible that David thought that because if you saw was only in the desert. They were traveling.
You can't hold your bag.
Stay there. But when we're here, we're just going to bring it on one. Maybe this because this journey was longer, Adarabba. You can't travel the 30 miles from Kiryat Yarim to Yerushalayim just on, you know. All right, why not? Get four levium every 100 yards and then keep switching. Right? Okay, but anyway, whatever the reason is, David.
When was the incident where it starts to fall? Was that before this? Or?
This is after he's starting to bring it to Yerushalayim. All right? So let's read that part of it. Perek Vav. Hold on.
Page 736, verse 3.
So it says, "Vayokivu esaron ha'elokim el agoloch chadasha." At least it was a new one. Okay. They took the aron onto a new wagon. Vayisau mibeis Avinadav asher bagiva. So they took it from the house of Avinadav. The Uza va'achio b'nei Avinadav noagim es ha'agoloch chadasha. And they got a nice kavod. These two brothers, Uza and Achio, and the father was walking in the front. Vayisau mibeis Avinadav asher bagiva im aron elokim, va'achyo holech lifnei ha'aron. Okay. So, right, look through detail. Chol beis Yisrael mesachakim lifnei Hashem b'chol atzei b'roshim u'b'chinerot v'nevolim v'tufim v'nananim u'v'tzeltzelim. All kinds of musical instruments, cymbals and timbrels, and wind instruments and string instruments. Okay. Now, Before I just tell me in paraphrased English, what happened then? Just paraphrase in English.
David dances before the.
Okay, no, but we're talking about the it slips from the. It slips from the aron. No, but describe it in English. Describe it in English. What's happening?
It's in the wagon and the ark starts to slip and. The sun wants to catch it, prevent it from falling on the ground.
Okay.
Slipping and sliding.
So that is how anybody answering this question would ever explain what happened.
Yeah.
Right?
Uh-huh.
Okay, so maybe in a Shmuel Bet class, maybe if you remember from 10 years ago, I gave this interpretation. I must confess that I'm about to tell you I have never seen anywhere. Right? Yeah. And I will tell you that Rashi just says that Uzzah should have known that the Aron can carry the people carrying it. How much more so can it carry itself? That's what Rashi writes from Sefer Yehoshua. Because it says, based on certain exegetical readings of Yehoshua, Perakimel, that when the Kohanim walked into the water with the Aron, into the Yarden, that the Aron carried the four Kohanim, this time it was Kohanim carrying it, carried the four Kohanim across the water. So Uzzah, come on. The Aron can carry people. How could it not carry itself? It wouldn't have fallen. You made a mistake. You disrespected the kavod of the Aron by thinking that it would fall. So here I have a few questions on this. One, the Radak in his Perush to Yehoshua strongly disagrees with this Agadah in Pshat. He says he doesn't think, he says the Agadah is something deeper, something about the power of the Aron in a different direction, but he disagrees, right? So, one thing. What if Uzzah was not aware of this Agadah? What if he was aware of it, but he held like the Radak? Or three, what if he was aware of it, felt like Rashi, but just wasn't thinking of it at the time and just reacted and
instinctively.
That's a reason for God to take him? So that's Rashi. This is just a sign of the inability of dealing with this story when you see what the Yerushalmi says. Yerushalmi Sota. Oh boy. This was a long trip, right? I purposely asked John for this cup of tea because right before they left for the trip, Uzzah and his brother knew it was a long trip in the hot sun, and they drank a lot of tea before they left.
So
So what does he do? He's in a very bakavadik place. Should he make everyone stop and go to the side? And what do you do? So he relieved himself right there in front of the Aron. That's what Yerushalmi, I'm just saying. Now, there's no such thing in the text, of course, that says that. But it's just that it shows the Yerushalmi, and the Bavli even hints to this also, in the 7th Perek in Sota, that there's nothing in the story. We have to make up something. Because God doesn't kill someone for nothing. Mm-hmm. All right, so here I am, coming after all this time. I never saw this parish, I must confess. I didn't write it. I haven't written it up anyplace. But I think that based on the way the Tanakh records, can I ask one other person again to paraphrase in English what just happened now? Don't look. Paraphrase to me. What happened? Go ahead.
He grasped it so it didn't hit the ground.
I mean, just if you were telling the story and they were bringing the Aron to Jerusalem, now what happened? Come on, quickly. Say it. Don't think. I don't want you to think. Once you think, then it, what happened?
Started to fall from the wagon.
And he grabbed it, but that's not what's written in the pasuk.
He relieved himself.
No, that's not what's written in the pasuk.
He touches it and he dies.
Correct, but no. Look at the way the pasuk describes. Look at the way the pasuk describes it.
He reaches out to the arrow.
Yeah, before what? Before. Why does it say it in the opposite order? It should say Shamtu Vayishmetu HaBakar. The Bakar started to slip. The Aron was slipping out, and he reacted and pushed it. Why does it tell us his reaction before telling it what happened?
Yeah.
See, here is my suggestion. Again, Uzzah, wherever you are in the Olam HaEmes, I'm not doing this Chas V'Shalom. You are a blessed name. We read about you in Haftorah. I'm just saying I would rather explain what I'm about to explain than to be not able to explain something Hashem does in the Tanakh. Uh-huh. Uzzah helped it fall because he wanted to be glorified by pushing it back. Look at the pasuk. It's called Munchausen's by proxy.
What pasuk?
Why does it say by Yishlach Uzzah El Aron Elokim Vayochez Bo before telling us why he did that? I understand, but why say it that way? Say it with the typical biblical grammar. By Yishmetu Habakar, tell me what happened, and then tell me his reaction.
Right.
Wow.
And it says by Yishlach, doesn't say his hand or anything.
Just saying. If I have to have a cheshbon with Uzzah after 120, I'll deal with it. For the time being, while I'm here on this planet, I have to justify what the Kodesh Baruch Hu does. And so Ramban, in his commentary, in his introduction to his commentary in the Torah, he writes in poetry, he writes that I greatly fear the day of wrath after I leave this earth. And he continues writing that what if all those places where I disagree with Ibn Ezra, and then I find out that I was wrong and he was right, and I have to face Ibn Ezra in the next world. So what's interesting is he in his Akdama to the Milchamos, his commentary to the Talmud, He doesn't. He says he's fearless there. That I'm gonna. If I have to take issue with the Ravid and I have to take issue with the Rif and the Rosh, and I'm okay with that. But in Tanakh, in Chumash, who am I to, you know, commenting on the Talmud? I'm not taking a backseat to anybody. I mean, in other words, I feel I'm going to write what I think is 100% true. But when commenting to the Torah, who am I to say that my parish is preferable to Ibn Ezra? Right? Who is his bar plukta most of the time. Anyway, this is my suggestion. So David puts a stop to the whole thing. He says, no, and he realizes it's his fault.
Why is it his fault?
Because I brought it back the wrong way. And he stops the procession and he sends it back to another man's house. A man, by the way, very strange name, Oved Edom Hagiti, who's neither an Edomite, neither a Giti. He's a Levi, it says in Divrei Yamin.
Was he employed? Employed by Edom? No.
That's his name. That's his name. Mm-hmm. Long name. Yes, Moshe.
So, two short questions. What is Uzzah's genealogy, and was it common knowledge that only a mama of the Levi tribe could carry the ark?
So, it should be, but it wasn't carried by a Levi. I don't know what those cows were. Those cows were probably not Levium. So, but Uzzah is not a Levi either. Obed Edom Hagiti is
a Levi. Yeah,
he's
a Levi.
Yes. But I don't know. But
maybe because of Rishim already violated the Aron HaKodesh, so maybe I can make a purification process. That's not the Levi doesn't have to come, because I think Moshe already made a Kiddusha. Aron was not Kodesh until Moshe make it Kodesh, and then they have to cut that itself. But the Kodesh was not Kodesh. So it was only
the Stam is the same one.
Yeah.
Okay, so when he's bringing the Aron back, he finally says, mm-hmm. You know what, the house of this man that it went to was blessed for 6 months. Come on, I want my house to be blessed already.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? So let's now take a look at Pasuk Yudbet. The king finds out that the house of Obed Edom Hagiti was blessed. So he says, Ve'elach David Ve'yalas Aron Elokim. I'm reading Pasuk Yudbet.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Verse 12. Just want to make sure my watch is right this time. It's 10 to 9 now, right?
Yes.
Okay, fine. Last week I went 10 minutes late because my watch was 10 minutes off. Okay, so it says, Vayiki tzadu no se aron Hashem shishot se'odim, Vayizbach shor mari. Every 6 steps, they offered a fatling. Right, the David mecharker bechol oz. Now, here is the narrator talking. David was mecharker.
Yeah.
Mecharker is what's known as the baalei dalid, the 4-letter roots.
Uh-huh.
Any root like this, galgal, charker, parpar, that has 4 letters like this,
mm-hmm.
So you know this is always a recurring thing. It's something that's you know, rolling or moving. You know, this, when someone's dancing mecharker. It means he's really dancing, right? Okay. There's a Hebrew word for dancing, merakade. It's used in Tanakh. It's used in this book. All right. The David chagur efod bad. What does that mean? Efod bad? Efod bad is. It doesn't mean that's all he was wearing, by the way. It doesn't mean chas v'shalom. It means that an efod bad is what the Kohen Gadol wears.
Yes.
In fact. It's not even a Kohen's garment. It's a Kohen Gadol garment, right?
Mm-hmm.
Now your English translation probably just reads linen tunic.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
In fact, that's the Targum Yonah son to this pasuk is kardut de boots, which means a linen tunic,
mm-hmm.
Right? What's even more interesting is that in Divrei Hayamim it says meil boots,
mm-hmm.
Right? Okay, but that aside, the word appears too often in Shmuel Aleph. When Shaul kills the 85 Kohanim,
mm-hmm.
It says all 85 of them were wearing an ephod bad.
Uh-huh.
85 Kohen Gadols? Only the Kohen Gadol wears an ephod bad. So, okay, apparently there's an ephod bad with a capital E and a capital B, right? A capital Aleph and a capital B, Bet. And then there's an ephod bad that's this sort of like, you know, a generic ephod bad.
It's a knockoff.
A knockoff, good.
Why is it being said?
Right.
Why do we have to know that?
So it means that he's dancing around like with a Kohen Gadol article that makes him, you know, I don't know. He was like.
But the thing is,
something a king doesn't usually wear. It could be that he was like doing shtick, like you could do with a chosn in front of a chosn kala. You put on the Mr. Ed glasses, you put on a big bow tie, you put on something that's shticky, and you do it because of your joy. Now, what's interesting is that, I should have brought this here for today, the last Rambam in Hilchos Lulav, he writes about the Simchas Beis HaShoeva. Mm-hmm. Know what that is, right?
Mm-hmm.
So he writes that no one should be afraid to dance with great levity at the Simchas Beis HaShoeva. And any rabbi who thinks, no, I can't juggle or I can't do, you know, he says no one should be a stuffed shirt to refrain. And he says the same for when dancing for a chasna kala. No one should think this is beyond me. I shouldn't be doing this, right? So he says, see, David, look how David was dancing, and Michal thought it was wrong, and she was wrong, because there's nothing wrong with even the king, Melech Yisrael, saying, V'sichakti lifnei Hashem. Mm-hmm. Right? So this is what he's doing, B'chol Oz, and part of it is wearing a shtick. He's wearing an ephod bod. He's wearing a sailor's outfit. I don't know, he's wearing an officer, something, you know, he's wearing a costume. B'David b'chol beis Yisrael ma'alim es aron Hashem b'trua u'v'kol shofar. Right? Yeah. Trua here is probably trumpets, but trua is usually a shofar itself, so why list it separately? Okay. Okay. V'haya aron Hashem bo'ir David u'michal bas Sha'ul nishkefa ba'arachalom. Chazal, they're so intuitive. Chazal say that anytime you have the word lashkif, it's always menacing. It's always except one. Hashkifa me'on kachecha in Parshas Kisav. But other than that, hashkif is always except when God looks down. But whenever you see a person, v'yashkef ba'adach alone v'hinei yitzchok mitzachei geisi shrifka yishto. Right? V'yashkef is always someone who shouldn't be looking the way, not the way he should be. Right? So she's nishkefa. What? Why is? But what do you call it, the top of a door?
A lintel.
Mashkof. Right? Glasses are called mishkafayim.
Yes.
It's all the same kind of word. Right? So not necessarily something bad here, but she's lurking and looking out the window and she's boiling and seething at what she's looking. And what does she see? Balash nishkava balachalon batera es hamelech David. What do you think it says Hamelech? It should say Vatela es David, Vatela es Isha. She's looking at her husband. No, he's Melech David. This is a Melech? This guy doesn't know how to behave like a Melech. But look what it says he's doing by now. Now, at this point, it could be that the dancing was building up.
Yes, extended.
In other words, he was at first Mecharker, which is dancing, but probably serious dancing. But now, the Torah, the text adds a word that is very rare in Tanakh, but is, I wonder if the word pizzazz comes from here, but that is over the top. No one should behave like mefazez. Mefazez means that you are totally out of control. You're stoned out of your mind. Yeah,
right.
I think we call today in modern Hebrew we call it.
Aziz, yes. If you don't have about thinking.
Yeah, aziz is like the, you know, those teenagers who get getting drunk and they're sitting and doing nothing and they're ruining their lives and they're.
What's the word here?
Mefazez or mecharker.
Yeah.
So he was mecharker. So I'd like to suggest that there's two ways to read this. It could be that at first he was mechaker, which is all right, nice dancing, but he just got it built up with more music, and who knows, maybe there was some incense there, that maybe some mushrooms they were having. Yeah, maybe they were listening to the timbal, and then he was getting into some nice 60s stuff, and then some tambourines, and maybe, right? So they was getting into some flower power. And so by that time, it was really, or maybe no, maybe he was continued to be mechaker. Mm-hmm. But this pasuk is telling us how she's seeing him. He could be just doing, you know, a little bit of this, and she sees him because, you know, if you're Queen Elizabeth and you wave like this, forget it. Because because Diana didn't know the Tachsise Malchus. You know, she came into and she hit her on every stupid nonsense. So stupid things were made like big things. So you know, so you know, so so. So if you see someone who you think the biggest dance should just be, did you just see online that the Pope dancing with those Hasidim? Did you see that?
Yes, that's great.
Someone passed it over to me, like a bunch of Hasidim that got invited to the Vatican. I don't know if it was in the Vatican, but where it was, but he had an audience with the Pope, about 20 Hasidim. And one of them is playing a guitar, one of them is playing a... And the Pope
they're
is...
They're rehearsing for Purim.
And he's keeping time.
And he's keeping time with them.
Maybe that's exactly.
This is when.
Maybe thank them.
In the last 2 weeks.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow.
It was a question. It's the Kol Ha'am. I think you know what... women also dancing. So was women dancing also together in year 7? So
of course they had a machitza with them. Yes. What are you talking about?
So why did Michal not dance also? If women also dance, they can't...
They're looking.
I don't know. A man is allowed to look at a single woman dancing. He shouldn't be looking at married women dancing.
Unless
but a man is allowed to woman look at single women dancing because that's what they do on Tu B'Av. It says in Baba Basra. It says from the end of Shoftim that the Sheva Ben Yom would look at choose the single women to whom to marry. All right, but he shouldn't be looking at a married woman dancing. That's a different thing. All right, so she sees him now. He's not just mecharker. He's mefazezing, and vativez lo belibo. You know, the Zion in Hebrew is it's like the Vativez, it's onomatopoetic almost.
Yeah.
Isn't Mefazez? I don't even know what it means, but I know it's something, it's a bizoyon, it's a zona, it's a zombie, it's a whatever's a Zion in it, it's like, remember the Sunshine Boys? Sardines isn't funny, pickles are funny, right? If it has a K in it, it's funny. Man was walking down the street and eating a pickle. That's funny. Man was walking down the street eating a sardine sandwich. That's not funny. So if it has a Zion in it, you know it's something bad. This word has two Zions in it. Okay. Bizayon, bazaz. You have to look at all the Hebrew words in the Tanakh that have two Zions in it. Words that end Zion, Zion. Okay, so...
How about Mizuzah?
So...
Zuz.
So it means from Zuz.
It's the
U sound. It's not together, it's separate.
So the Gemara says there, Zuz Moves, in Menachos, that it pushes away death. Okay, well, we'll stop with that. And so I'm really building you up big time for my final conversation with Yigal, which Shemir Hashem will do next week.